The lights on his helmet revealed the mangled basket sticking halfway out of the ice mound, like a crab trap on the bottom of the ocean. Beside it, a massive wad of steel cable lay in a sloppy stack. It had fallen on top of and beside Kate, but the basket had shielded her. A shame. Dorian stood erect and marched to the portal. He stopped right below the bell that hung far above, at the top of the dome. The lights from his helmet raked over it several times, and he smiled. It sat there, silent, still. The wicked device that had killed his brother instantly, and his mother with the plague it unleashed on the survivors, now silenced. The portal opened, as if recognizing that his moment of destiny had arrived. He walked through it. Chapter 127 David's mind raced. "Look, I don't know what to tell you. The year is 2013. Like hell." The man held the pistol on David as he walked to a cabinet, reached inside, and withdrew a shiny clump of gold. He threw it to David. It was a watch. David turned it over and read the date and time. September 19th, 1985. "Yeah, huh. I actually don't have a gold watch with the wrong date, but..." He reached for his pocket. The man held the pistol up. David froze. "Relax, I have my own time capsule. A picture in my pocket. Reach in. Take a look." The man stepped forward and drew the glossy photo out of David's pocket. He studied the picture of the iceberg with the sub sticking out. "I'm guessing the Amari weren't taking satellite photos of icebergs in 1985. The man shook his head and looked away, as if he were still putting the pieces together. "It's Kane's U-boat, isn't it?" David nodded. "We think they found it a few weeks ago. Listen, I'm just as confused as you are. Let's just talk to each other, try to figure this out. How did you get here?" "I was working in the hidden chamber. I had figured out how to work their machines."
"You put the videos on repeat?"
"Videos? Oh, yes, I did. In case I didn't come back and someone found the chamber." He sat on the cot, looking at his feet, seeming to search his thoughts. "I also put the spear in the door. I can't even remember why I had it down here. I was testing different artifacts from the Amari vault, hoping something would bring more of the machines to life. I managed to get the door open, but I was stuck. There was nothing else I could discover in the chamber. I assumed there was another control station in the next room, so I went through. I tried to hold the door open with the spear. I wish it had worked. I haven't been able to get back through the door. The machines here are different somehow. Most are turned off. There are a few other mysteries, but I haven't gotten very far in the last month, that is, until just before you showed up. It seems like the entire place is waking up. More machines are working and doors open that previously wouldn't move. I was exploring when I heard the door open and found you. Let's go back to the time difference. I know you're not Patrick Pierce, or, what was it, Tom Warner. He would be like 80. Just tell me who you are."
"I am Patrick Pierce."
The man leaned forward. "Time moves slower here. It must be a day here to every year outside."
"How?"
"I don't know. But we think it has something to do with the bell. It could have two functions. It's a sentry device to keep non-Atlanteans out, but that's just the half of it. When we first began studying the device, we thought it was a time machine. It created a field around it, a sort of time dilation bubble. Like I said, time moved more slowly near the bell. We thought it had something to do with gravitational displacement, folding and warping the space-time around it. We thought it might even be a wormhole generator."
"A what?"
"Forget the jargon. The ideas were based on Einstein's theory of general relativity. I'm sure that's been updated or even thrown out by now. Suffice it to say that in the years after we extracted the bell in Gibraltar, we noticed that it seemed to slow down time in the space around it. We believed it generated power this way. We were able to essentially reverse the device by supplying power to it and minimizing its gravitational effects."
"That's interesting.
But there's just one problem. The bell in Gibraltar was removed almost 100 years ago.
I know. I removed it.
I have another theory. I think when the ship in Gibraltar exploded, the Atlanteans were trapped in the section that broke off. I think the door they went through wasn't a passage to another room in that ship. I think it was a portal to another ship. I don't think we're in Gibraltar.
Chapter 128. Around the next corner, Kate finally got the boys to stop.
"Tell me what's going on," she pleaded.
"We have to hide, Kate," Addie said.
"From whom?"
"There's no time," Surya said.
Time. The word echoed through Kate's mind, and another fear gripped her. She spun the boys around and searched for the digital readout. 3 hours, 23 minutes, 51 seconds. Almost 3.5 hours left. Martin had said there was less than 30 minutes before detonation.
How?
It didn't matter. The clock was still ticking. She had to think. The boys were pulling at her again, and behind them, a set of double doors opened.
Chapter 129. Dorian slipped the last of the spacesuit off and surveyed the room. Some kind of decontamination chamber. He walked toward the smaller door. His steps echoed loudly in the tall iron chamber. The door opened as he approached, and he stepped out into a corridor, just like Gibraltar. It was all true. This was another Atlantean city. Lights flashed to life at the top and bottom of the corridor. The place looked pristine, untouched. It certainly hadn't endured a nuclear blast. Why not? Had the children made it farther into the tombs? Had the Atlanteans caught them? Disabled the bombs? Up ahead, Dorian heard footfalls, boots marching, striking the iron floor in unison. He drew his sidearm and moved to the side of the corridor, into the shadow of an iron beam.
Chapter 130. Kate stood and peered into the room. There were a dozen giant glass tubes standing on end like the ones Patrick Pierce, her father, had described in the journal. And like those tubes, each of these tubes contained an ape, or a human, or something in between. Kate ventured into the room, marveling at the tubes. It was incredible. A hall of forgotten ancestors. All the missing links in humanity's evolution, neatly collected and catalogued in this oval room. 2 miles below the ice in Antarctica, like a child might collect butterflies in a mason jar. A few of the specimens were shorter than Kate, no more than 4 feet tall. Most were about her height, and a few were a good bit taller. They were all colors, some black, some brown, others pale white. Scientists could spend lifetimes in this room. Many had already spent lifetimes digging up bones, desperately trying to find mere fragments of the intact humans floating there, suspended in the 12 or so glass tubes. The boys followed her into the room, and the double doors shut behind them. Kate scanned the room. Besides the tubes, there wasn't much else except a chest-high bar with a glass top. Kate walked over to it, but stopped short as the doors to the room began to open again.
Chapter 131. Patrick Pierce kept his hand on the pistol as he watched the man who called himself David Vale. He had let the younger man lead. His story was plausible, but Patrick still didn't trust him.
Or maybe I just don't want to believe it.
They walked down one long corridor after another, and Patrick's mind drifted to Helena, to that day 7 years ago when the glass tube had hissed open. The white clouds had parted, and he'd reached out to touch her. He thought his hand would turn to sand, crumble and blow away like ashes in the wind when he felt her cold skin. He fell to his knees, and the tears ran down his face. Mallory Craig wrapped an arm around him, and Patrick threw the man to the ground, then slugged him twice, three times, four times in the face, before two Imari security guards pulled him off Craig. Craig, the devil's right hand, the man who had lured him into a trap meant to kill him. A frightened boy, Dieter Kane, cowered in the corner. Craig got to his feet, tried to wipe the blood that kept coming from his face, then collected Dieter and fled the room. Patrick had wanted to bury Helena with her family in England, but Craig wouldn't allow it.
"We'll need new names, Pierce. Any connection to the past must be erased."
New names. Catherine. Kate, the man, Vale, had called her. Patrick tried to imagine what it had been like for her. He had been an absentee father, and when he was around, an awkward father at best. From the moment he had held Catherine in his arms, he had dedicated himself to dismantling the Imari threat and unraveling the mysteries of Gibraltar and the Bell, to making the world safe for her. That was the best he could do for her, and he had failed. If what Vale said was true, the Imari were stronger than ever, and Kate, he had missed her whole life. Worse, she had been raised by a stranger. Not only that, she had been drawn into the Imari conspiracy. It was a nightmare. He tried to push the thoughts from his mind, but they seemed to resurface around every corner they turned, seemed to rise out of the floor of every new corridor, like a ghost that wouldn't go away. Patrick eyed the man hobbling in front of him. Would Vale have answers? Would they even be the truth? Patrick cleared his throat.
"What's she like?"
"Who? Oh, Kate?" David looked back and smiled. "She's amazing, incredibly smart, and extremely strong-willed."
"I have no doubt of that."
Hearing the words was so surreal, but it somehow helped Patrick come to terms with the fact that his daughter had grown up without him. He felt like he should say something, but he wasn't sure what. After a moment, he said,
"It's strange to talk about Vale. For me, it was just a few weeks ago when I said goodbye to her in West Berlin. It's awkward to know my own daughter grew up without a father. She turned out all right, trust me."
David paused for a moment, then continued.
"She's like no one I've ever met. She's beautiful. Okay, that's enough. Let's, stay focused, Vale."
Patrick picked up the pace. Apparently there was a speed limit to revelations, of a certain type. Patrick moved in front of Vale and began leading the way. He had an arm and a leg on the man, literally, and Vale was unarmed, so he probably wasn't much of a threat. And Vale's last answer had convinced Patrick. The younger man was telling the truth. David pushed to keep up.
"Right," he said.
They plowed down the iron corridors in silence, and after a while, Patrick stopped to let David catch his breath.
"Sorry," he said. "I know the goo takes it out of you." He raised his eyebrows. "Had a few accidents myself exploring in the last month."
"I can keep up," David said, between pants.
"Sure you can. Remember who you're talking to. I was hobbling around in these tunnels 100 years before you. You need to take it easy."
David looked up at him. "Speaking of, you're walking fine now."
"Yes. Though I would trade it to go back. The tube. I walked right out in 1918. A few days in there fixed me right up. I didn't put it in the journal. At the time, all I could think about was what was happening around me. Helena, the Spanish flu."
Patrick stared at the wall for a minute.
"I think the tubes did something else. When I came out in 78, I could work the machines. I think it's why I could go through the portal in Gibraltar."
Patrick eyed David.
"But I still don't understand how you could. You've never been in a tube."
"True. I admit, I don't understand it."
"Did the Imari treat you with something?"
"No. Or I don't think so. But actually, I was treated. I got blood from someone who was in the tubes. Kate. I was wounded in Tibet. I lost a lot of blood, and she saved my life." Patrick nodded and paced the corridor.
That's interesting.
He glanced over at the goo-covered wounds on David's shoulder and leg.
The wounds were cleaned, but I thought they were gunshot wounds. How did you get them?
Dorian Sloane. So, he's joined the Amari and continued the family legacy. Little devil was growing more evil by the day in 1985. He was 15 then. He hasn't slowed down. David straightened up.
Thanks for the rest. I'm ready.
Patrick led the way again, resuming a brisk but somewhat slower pace. Up ahead, a set of double doors that had never opened for him before cracked and slid aside as they approached.
It's exciting, opening passages that were closed yesterday. Listen to me, I sound like the fools who hired me during the war.
David shook his head. The war.
What?
It's nothing. It's just strange to hear the war in reference to World War I. These days it means the war in Afghanistan.
Patrick stopped. The Soviets?
We're at war? Oh, no. They've been gone since 89. Actually, the Soviet Union doesn't even exist anymore.
Who then?
Al-Qaeda, or actually now it's the Taliban. A radical Islamic tribe of sorts.
America is at war with an Afghan tribe.
Yeah, it's, long story. The lights in the corridor flickered, then went out. Both men froze.
Has that ever happened before?
David whispered.
No.
Patrick took out an LED bar and snapped a switch. It cast light into the corridor and all around them. He felt like Indiana Jones, striking a torch that illuminated some ancient corridor. He started to make a reference, but David probably wouldn't know who Indiana Jones was. Raiders of the Lost Ark would be an old movie by now, over 30 years old, and the younger generation probably didn't watch old movies anymore. The younger man raised his good arm to block his eyes and squinted. Patrick paced ahead, taking each step with care. The lights in the corridor flickered again, almost coming on before winking out. The door at the end of the corridor didn't automatically open as they approached. Patrick extended his hand to the glass panel beside it. Sparse wisps of fog wafted out, and the pops at his hand were less intense. What was happening?
I think there's a problem with the power or something, Patrick said.
He thought he could work the door. He manipulated the controls and the door slid open slowly. He held the LED bar up, casting light into the massive space. The chamber was bigger than any he had ever seen, down here or anywhere else. It looked as though it was miles long and miles wide. Rows of long glass tubes were stacked to the ceiling, higher than he could see. They stretched into the distance, miles away, far into the darkness. They were the same type of tubes Patrick had seen in Gibraltar so many years ago, with two exceptions. These tubes were full of bodies, and the white mist inside was changing, clearing. The dissipating clouds inside the tubes revealed only brief glimpses of the people inside, if they even were people. They looked more like humans than the ape man in Gibraltar. Were these the Atlanteans? If not, who? And what was happening to them? Were they waking up? Patrick's fascination with the tubes was interrupted by a sound, deep inside the chamber. Footsteps. Chapter 132. The double doors to the room slid open, and Kate fought to hide her surprise when a tall, middle-aged man wearing a Nazi military uniform strode in. The man came to a halt and stood still as stone, his back rigid. His eyes moved slowly over Kate, and then the children. Unconsciously, Kate took a step forward, placing herself between the man and her children. His lips curled slightly at the ends, as if her involuntary motion had revealed something, had told him a secret. Maybe the step had betrayed her, but his smile had done the same for him. She knew that cold smile, and she knew who the man was.
"Hello, Herr Kane," Kate said in German. We have been looking for you for a very long time.
Chapter 133. Patrick listened as the footsteps somewhere in the darkness stopped. He and David both froze, looking at each other, waiting.
"What is this place?" David whispered.
"I'm not sure."
"You've never been in here?"
"No,
but I think... maybe
I have an idea," Patrick said as he gazed at the tubes. The room was dark. The only light came from the tubes that hung in bunches on metal racks, like bananas hanging from a tree. Was it possible? Could the Amari have been right all along?
"I think this could be a giant hibernation vessel.
The door in Gibraltar, it was a portal to another place, probably the structure in Antarctica. And that structure is... it's what they thought it was."
"Who?"
"Kane. The Amari. Their whole theory was that the structure in Gibraltar was a small outpost for the Atlantean homeland, which they assumed was under Antarctica. They believed the Atlanteans were hibernational superhumans, waiting to return north and retake the Earth when the weather suited them. Is there another possibility?"
Patrick looked around at the tubes and shook his head.
"Hell if I know. I'm a coal miner from West Virginia."
At that moment, the footsteps resumed. Patrick glanced at David's cane, the spear. The look on his face exposed his thoughts. If they walked to the footsteps, whoever it was would hear them coming.
"I can wait here," David said, "or we could call out."
"No," Patrick whispered quickly. "If the Amari have found an entrance in Antarctica, the footsteps could be... might not be friendlies, or..."
He glanced at the tubes.
"Either way, we wait."
Both men receded behind the closest bunch of tubes and crouched in the shadows as the footsteps coming toward them echoed loudly through the tombs.
Chapter 134. Dorian watched the Nazi soldiers march past him in the dimly lit corridor. It was true. Some of them were alive. His father could be alive. He stepped out from behind the shadow, straightened his back, and spoke with force.
"Ich heiße Dieter Kain."
The two men spun and pointed their submachine guns at him.
"Halt!"
one man yelled.
"How dare you?" Dorian spat at him. "I am Conrad Kane's only surviving son. You will lower your weapons and take me to him at once."
Chapter 135. Conrad Kane crept closer to Kate, like a big cat studying its prey, calculating whether or when to strike.
"Who are you?"
Kate's mind raced. She needed a believable lie.
"I am Dr. Carolina Knapp, lead scientist on a special Amari research project sent to find you, sir."
Kane scrutinized her, then the children.
"Impossible. I've been here less than 3 months. Launching another expedition would take far longer."
Kate wondered if he was suspicious of her accent. She hadn't spoken German in so long. A short answer would be better.
"You've been here much longer than a few months, sir. But I'm afraid we're out of time. We must go. I need to get these children out of these packs and off..."
Another Nazi soldier rushed in, speaking quickly in German.
"Sir, we found something, and more people."
He panted and waited for Kane.
Kane looked from the man to Kate.
"I will be back."
He appraised her again.
"Doctor."
He bent down to face the children, and to Kate's surprise, spoke English.
"Boys, I need your help. Please come with me."
He swept them into his arms and left the room before Kate could object.
Chapter 136. 15 minutes of discussion with the oafs had gotten Dorian nowhere. Their heads would roll when he told his father, holding him at gunpoint like a captured cat burglar. Finally, he had exhaled and stood there,
rocking onto his heels and waiting. Every second felt like an eternity. Then slowly, the silence broke. The footfalls rounding the corner echoed with the rhythm of Dorian's heart as the moment he had waited for his entire life arrived. The man he could barely remember, who had tucked his sickly body into a glass coffin, who had saved his life and would save the world, his father turned the corner and marched up to him. Dorian wanted so much to run to him, to embrace his father and tell him all the things he'd done, how he had saved him, just as he had saved Dorian almost 100 years ago. He wanted his father to know that he had grown up to be strong as his father was, that he was worthy of the sacrifices his father had made. But Dorian kept still. The submachine guns were one reason, but not the biggest. His father's eyes were cold, piercing. They seemed to analyze him, as if his eyes were gathering pieces of a puzzle.
"Papa?" Dieter whispered.
"Hello, Dieter."
His father spoke in German, and the voice was lifeless, businesslike.
"There is much I must tell you. I was awakened in 1978. Time moves slower here, Dieter."
"You are 40?
42,
Dieter said, amazed that his father had already made the leap.
2013 outside. Here 75 days. A day for every year. A 360-to-1 time differential."
Dorian's mind raced, trying to catch up. He wanted to say something insightful, to let his father know that he was smart enough to solve the mystery as well, but all he could manage was,
"Yes, but why?" "We've found their hibernation chamber. It is as we suspected,"
his father said as he turned away and paced the length of the corridor.
"Perhaps the bell also distorts time inside the structure and generates the power they need for the hibernation. Perhaps the hibernation is not perfect. Perhaps they do age, if ever so gradually. Or maybe it is to benefit their machines, which would certainly endure some wear every year. Either way, slowing time would help them leapfrog through the ages. We also found something else. The Atlanteans are not what we think they are. The truth is more bizarre than we imagined. It will take some time to explain."
Dorian motioned to the packs.
"The children are carrying explosives. Yes, a clever move. I assume they could pass the bell,"
Conrad said.
"Yes, there was another woman who came through, Kate Warner. She is Patrick Pierce's daughter. I was afraid she would get to them. But it doesn't matter now. We're almost out of time."
Conrad checked the back of the pack.
"Less than 2 hours. The woman did find them, but we have her. We'll put them in the tombs. We'll return if we need to finish the job.
We should leave soon after. It's a 30-minute walk from here to the portal door." Dorian bent down to the children and spoke in English.
"Hello again. I told you Kate would be down here. Did you enjoy the first game?"
The boys simply looked at him. They were as dumb as doornails, Dorian thought.
"We're going to play a new game. Would you like that?"
Dorian waited, but the boys said nothing.
"Okay, I'll take that as a yes. This game is a race. Are you fast runners?"
The boys nodded. Chapter 137. David watched the two Nazi soldiers wander deeper into the tombs, gawking at the tubes. They wore thick sweaters and no helmets. They were Kriegsmarine, members of the Nazi Navy. They would be very skilled at hand-to-hand combat in close quarters. Surprise was imperative for David and Patrick to take them down. David raised a hand to make signs, but Patrick was already signing to him. "Wait until they pass." David tried to squat lower, but his leg burned. That he could squat at all was a miracle. The goo really worked. The goo, would they smell it? Patrick crouched beside him, between two other tubes in the banana cluster closest to the meandering soldiers. 2 seconds. One man stopped. Did he smell it? Above David and Patrick's hiding position, a burst of white fog spewed from the tubes. drawing the soldiers' attention. They swung their submachine guns off their backs and raised them, but David and Patrick were already up and on them, springing like snakes out of the tall grass onto their prey. The force of David's lunge took his target to the ground, and David slammed the heel of his hand into the man's forehead. The soldier's head hit the iron floor with a crack, and a pool of blood spread out around it. 4 feet away, Patrick was struggling with the other soldier. The young soldier was on top of him. The Nazi had a knife and was pressing it into Patrick's chest. David jumped on the man and pulled him off of Patrick. David knocked the knife out of the soldier's hand and pinned him to the ground. Patrick was there, beside him, holding the knife to the man's throat. The Nazi stopped struggling in a silent surrender, but David still held his arms to the floor. David didn't speak German, but before he could open his mouth, Patrick began interrogating the man in German.
Wie viele Männer?
Vier.
Patrick tore the knife from his neck and dug it into the man's left index finger.
Zwölf!
The man cried.
Herr Kane?
The soldier nodded. He was sweating profusely now.
Toten Sie mich schnell, he said.
Patrick questioned him a little more while David pinned him to the floor.
Schnell!
The man pleaded. Patrick drew the knife across his neck, and the flow of blood and death followed in rapid succession after. Patrick dropped the knife beside the man and collapsed onto the floor. Blood dripped from his own chest wound. David crawled over the dead man and gathered the remains of the black goo from his own mostly healed shoulder and leg wounds. He wiped the paste into Patrick's wound, and the older man grimaced as it made contact.
"Don't worry. You'll be as good as new within a few hours," David grinned. "Maybe sooner."
Patrick sat up.
"If we have that long."
He motioned to a door in the direction the soldiers had come from.
"There's no question now. We're in Antarctica."
He drew a few quick breaths. "How many are there?" Patrick looked at the dead soldiers.
12. 10 now. Kane is with them. If they get in this chamber, it will be genocide. And after that, maybe... it will be. Very bad news for the human race."
David began scavenging the men's bodies, gathering weapons and anything that might be useful.
"Did they say anything else?"
Patrick looked at him, confused.
"Have they seen anyone else?"
David said, hopefully.
Patrick caught his meaning.
"No, they haven't seen anyone. They've been here for almost 3 months, which makes sense if they arrived around 1938. A year per day, a month for every 2 hours. They said they just found this chamber and a man had gone back to report it." David handed Patrick one of the machine guns and held his arm out to help Patrick up.
"We should hurry then."
Patrick grabbed David's arm and struggled to his feet. He glanced back at the dead soldier who had overpowered him.
"Look, Vale, I haven't been a soldier in 25 years.
"We'll be just fine," David said. Chapter 138. Dorian held the children by the shoulders as he marched behind his father. This was the way of the world. Life could turn on a dime. He and his father reunited on their way to finish their great work, saving the human race. All his sacrifices, all his decisions, he had been right. Ahead of them, gunshots rang out. Chapter 139. David dropped the two guards standing at the doors to the tombs before either could get a shot off. To his left, another guard rounded the corner and sprayed bullets into the iron wall beside him. But Patrick caught the soldier full in the chest with 3 quick shots, sending him quickly to the floor. David swept the other way in the corridor. Clear. He turned and jogged to catch up with Patrick, who was inching around the corner from which the third soldier had emerged.
"I'll take point," David said.
He peeked his head around and a bullet whizzed past his head.
"I'll cover you," Patrick said, as he extended his handgun around the corner and fired several shots.
David stepped into the corridor and closed on the man who was pressing against the adjacent wall. David hit him with two shots and a tight grouping on his chest. Four down. Five plus Kane left. Still not great odds, and they'd lost the element of surprise. One step at a time. Patrick was beside him, and both men eyed the double doors the soldier must have come from. They took up positions on either side of the door, and Patrick worked the glass panel until the doors parted, revealing a room with 12 glass tubes holding... ape men? David had to focus. Patrick seemed less phased. He stepped quickly into the room, sweeping his gun from side to side. David followed. The room was empty. Then, from behind him, David sensed someone closing on them. He spun around and raised the machine gun to fire. Kate. She had been hiding behind the control station. He jerked his finger off the trigger and dropped the gun to his side. He moved toward her, ready to sweep her up. Just as he reached her, Kate's eyes met Patrick's. She turned from David. Dad? The old man stood there, a look somewhere between remorse and disbelief on his face. Catherine? A tear dropped from Kate's eye as she walked to him and embraced him. He grunted as he hugged her back. She pushed back. You're alive. She wrinkled her nose. And you're hurt. And what is that smell?
I'm okay, Catherine.
Oh, God, you look so much like her. Tears welled in his eyes. I was so worried, but I know you. It's... for me, only a few weeks have passed. Kate nodded. She seemed to have already put it together. David marveled at her as he stood there, a little awkwardly. She held her arm out, and he walked over and hugged her, pressing his face into the side of her head. She was alive. In that moment, that was all that mattered to him. She had left him in Gibraltar, but she was alive. An emptiness inside of him felt filled once again. She released them and said, "How did you..."
"Gibraltar," her father said. "A door in the chamber I found. It was a portal to Antarctica, to this larger structure. There are more men. We need to..."
"Yes," Kate said. "They have the children. Dorian is making them carry backpacks with nuclear bombs." David looked around, thinking, and then said, "There's a chamber with tubes. It goes on for miles. I bet that's where they're going." A plan formed in his mind. He wouldn't put her in danger again. "You stay." Kate shook her head. "No." She walked to the dead man who had run out of her room and picked up his machine gun. She stared at David.
"I'm coming. And I get a gun this time. I'm not asking."
David exhaled. Patrick looked from Kate to David.
"I take it this has been a recurring discussion?"
"Yeah, it's, been a weird week." David focused on Kate. "You're not going out there."
"I can't stay here. You know it."
David resisted, his mind searching for a counter-argument. Patrick looked between them, seeming to understand that something unsaid was going on.
"Unless we stop what's about to happen, I won't be safe anywhere, this room included. You need my help. We need to get those children and get out of this structure. Neither of you know them."
She was right. David knew it. But sending her out there, taking that chance, seemed unbearable to him.
"You have to let me go with you, David. I know what you're afraid of."
Kate's eyes scanned him, waiting for a reaction.
"We have to do this. The past is the past."
David nodded slowly. The fear was still there, but it was different somehow. Knowing that she accepted the risk, that she believed in him and was going along with him as his partner, it changed things. David walked over to Kate and handed her a pistol. "The Luger is less likely to jam. It's loaded and ready to go. Just point and shoot. It holds 8 rounds. You'll have plenty. Stay behind us." Chapter 140. Dorian held a hand up for the 5 soldiers behind him to halt. He peeked around the corner. 2 dead soldiers, one on each side of the door. Had they come out or gone in? Out, hopefully. He stuck his head out again. Another dead body at the corner of the hall. He was running toward them. They had come out.
Clear,
he called, and the man and his father spread out in the hall, checking the dead men. Dorian bent down to the kids.
Oh, he corralled them toward him, away from the dead men. Don't pay attention to them, they're just playing dead. It's another game. Now it's time for the race. Remember, run as fast as you can. The first to the end of the room gets a huge prize.
His father worked the glass panel beside the giant double doors. They spread open silently, and Dorian shoved the children through just as the first shots rang out. Two of their five men fell instantly. Dorian lunged and covered his father, but he was too late. The bullet struck Conrad's arm, spun him around, and threw him into the wall. Dorian pulled his father back behind the door as the remaining three soldiers retreated behind the other side of the doorframe. Dorian tore his father's shirt sleeve and inspected the wound quickly. The older man pushed his hands away.
"It's a flesh wound, Dieter. Don't be emotional. Stay focused."
He drew his pistol and peered around the doorframe. Shots scraped the iron above his head. Dorian pressed him to the wall.
"Papa, go out the way I came. One of us must get out.
I will cover you.
We must stay."
Dorian pulled his father to his feet.
"I will finish them and then follow you."
He shoved him into the hall and fired rapid-fire blasts from the submachine gun until it clicked empty. His father had cleared the corridor. Dorian had saved him. He slumped back into the iron wall. A smile spread across his face. Chapter 141. David looked back at Patrick.
"We have to go around. We can't make an assault on their position at the entrance, not without superior numbers or explosives.
This corridor must connect with where we enter the tombs. It's not far away. All these corridors feed into the tombs. Let's keep moving. The kids were running. Maybe we can catch them," Patrick said.
David looked around as if searching for another way.
"Agree. You two go. I'll keep Sloane and his men here."
Kate poked her head between them.
"David, no.
This is what we're doing, Kate."
David's voice was flat, cold, final. She stared him in the eyes for a long moment, then looked away.
"What about the bombs?"
David nodded knowingly toward Patrick.
"Your dad has a plan for that."
Comprehension broke over Patrick's face as Kate turned to him and said,
"You do?"
"Yes, I do. Now, let's move."
Chapter 142. Kate followed her father through another entrance to the tombs just as the children crossed the aisle ahead of them.
"Addie! Saria!"
Kate screamed. The boys stopped their sprint, almost falling over. She ran to them and looked at the time on the pack. 32 minutes, 1 second. 32 minutes. 31 minutes, 59 seconds.
"How are you going to disable—"
"Trust me, Catherine," her father said. He tugged at her arm, and they ran out of the tombs, back into the long corridor. From the direction they had come, Kate heard the sound of automatic gunfire.
David.
Fighting the rest of them. Alone. She wanted so much to go back, but the children. The bombs. Her father was tugging at her arm again, and she found herself putting one foot in front of the other, marching quickly away from the gunfire. Chapter 143. David heard Kate shout for the children. He chanced a look around the corner. Had the Nazis heard it too? The soldiers at the door were taking off into the massive chamber. He couldn't let them reach Kate. He stepped toward the doors and fired. Empty. He dropped the gun and grabbed the last submachine gun from the fallen Nazi, firing at the two running men, mowing them down. Only one plus Dorian left. The last soldier peeked around the corner, and David nailed him with a blast of shots that caught him in the head. It had been a trap. The runners were the bait. They had hoped David would panic and run quickly into the tombs after them. giving the sniper an easy shot. One left. Dorian. David didn't hear any footsteps. Somewhere deep in the tombs, a set of doors slammed shut. Kate, Patrick, and the children were out. He should back away, follow them. He stopped, just before the door. He would have to run to catch up to them, but he stood there. 9/11 was a long time ago. He had Kate, and he had the Amari to fight. The outbreak. Where would Sloane be? Somewhere deep in the tombs, hiding, waiting, watching the entrance. David could wait him out a bit, or... He shook his head as if shaking off the thought. He took a couple of steps back, still holding the submachine gun at the ready, and when no one emerged, he turned from the door and started down the corridor at full speed. The first shots tore through David's back and exited through his chest, hurling him into the wall and then onto the floor face first. More bullets hit his limp body on the floor, raking over his legs. Footfalls, a hand, turning him over. David pulled the trigger of the pistol twice. The bullets ripped through the jeer on Dorian's face, blowing brain and bone out of the back of his head, painting the ceiling red and gray. A bittersweet smile crossed David's lips as he blew out his last breath. Chapter 144. Conrad latched the helmet on the suit and waited for the portal to open. The metal doors parted with a loud boom, revealing a massive ice cathedral very similar to the one he had crossed almost 3 months ago, or 75 years ago. If this one was the same, there would be a bell hanging just outside, above the entrance. The bell on the other side of the structure had been turned off when Conrad had crossed. It hadn't so much as flickered as he and his men marched under it. But they had turned that bell on from inside. He knew that now. The control systems inside the structure were complex, and he and his men had tried to access a system they thought was hibernation control. It turned out to be the controls for a weather satellite. Kane had actually downed the satellite somewhere in America, he believed, possibly in New Mexico. Whatever he did triggered some sort of anti-intrusion routine. It locked them out of the systems and activated the bell, killing the men on his sub. None of the systems had worked since then, until today. He wondered if they had already removed the bell outside, or if the reactivation of the control systems meant it was disabled. There was also another possibility. Maybe the bell would only attack people trying to enter, not exit. If it was still on, he would have to move fast to get clear of it. Kane took a tentative step out of the decontamination chamber. His eyes were adjusting, and he could see a cluster of soft lights, like tiny stars glowing in a mound of snow, just under a mangled metal cage. There was something else, a metal basket, hanging from a thick cord. Yes, that was it, his escape route, even if the bell activated. Kane took another step, clearing the portal doors. Above him, a low rumble reverberated through the space and echoed in his suit, maybe even his bones. There was a bell, and it was thundering to life. Chapter 145. Kate tugged at the pack on Addie's back. Finally, it came free. 1:53. She turned to Surya. The black goo was eating away at the straps on his backpack as well. They were almost free. Kate's father pulled the boy away from the straps and shoved him toward her. He motioned toward the second of six doors. "Go, Catherine. I'll take care of this." "No. Tell me, how?" She searched his face, wondering how he could disable the bombs. He sighed and nodded toward the door. "When the Atlanteans exited the Gibraltar structure, they set the portal up to be a one-way escape hatch to this structure in Antarctica. But the structure here was shut down. That's why I couldn't get back. But if I'm right, the activation of the systems here will allow Atlanteans to pass back through it. You have pure Atlantean DNA. You were incubated in the tubes. It will work for you.
Now, this is important. When you get to the other side, you'll be in Gibraltar, in a control room. Don't touch anything. You must leave the portal open so that I can follow you through. I need to close the portal, permanently. And this bomb can't explode here in Antarctica. Do you understand? Kate stared at him, trying to comprehend. When you get to the other side, you must get to the surface and as far away as you can. You'll have about 360 minutes, 6 hours. A minute here is 360 minutes there, do you understand? Her father's voice was firm. A tear fell from Kate's face. She finally understood. She hugged him for 3 long seconds, but when she tried to pull away, she found that her father was holding her tight. She wrapped her arms back around him.
I made so many mistakes, Catherine. I was trying to protect you and your mother.
His voice broke as Kate leaned back and looked him in the eyes.
I read the journal, Dad. I know why you did it. All of it. I understand. And I love you.
I love you, too.
Very much. Kate grabbed the children by the hands and ran through the door. Chapter 146. Conrad felt a bead of sweat form on his forehead as the thump, thump, thump of the bell above grew louder. Through the glass of the helmet, an image emerged, as if a miniature version of the person were sitting inside the glass. The gray-haired man was sitting in an office, behind a large wooden desk with an Amari flag behind him. There was a map of the world on the wall, but it was different somehow, all wrong. And the man's face. Conrad knew him.
"Mallory!" Conrad cried out. "Help me!"
"Of course, Conrad. There's a syringe sitting on the basket. Inject yourself."
Conrad bounded forward, desperately trying to reach the basket. He fell twice, then again. He decided that he couldn't run in the suit, so he waddled awkwardly, making the best speed he could, as the bell droned louder each second.
"What's in the syringe?"
"Something we're working on. You should hurry, Conrad."
Conrad reached the basket and picked up the large syringe.
"Take me up, Mallory. Forget this science experiment."
"We can't take the risk. Inject yourself, Conrad. It's your only chance."
Conrad flipped open the metal case and eyed the syringe for a second as the bell beat louder. There was something else running down his face. He saw the red reflection in the glass of the helmet. How long did he have? Conrad snatched the syringe, pulled the plastic cover off the needle, and plunged it through his suit into his arm. The case must have been some sort of warming device, but the liquid was still freezing as it flowed into his veins.
"I've done it! Now lift me up!"
"I'm afraid I can't do that, Conrad."
Conrad felt wetness on his arms. It wasn't sweat. The bell thundered louder. He felt strange, weak inside.
"What have you done to me?"
Mallory leaned back in the chair, a satisfied look on his face.
"Do you remember giving me that tour of the camp when you were testing the bell? It was the early 30s. I don't remember exactly when, but I do remember your speech. What you said to the workers to convince them to do those terrible things. I had wondered how you would pull it off. You said, 'This is hideous work, but these people are giving their lives so that we can understand the bell, so that we can save and purify the human race. Their sacrifice is needed. Their sacrifice will be remembered. The few die so the many can survive.'"
Mallory shook his head.
"I was so impressed, so enamored with you then. That was before you put me in a tube for 40 years, before you took my life. I was loyal. I played second fiddle for so many years, and look at how you repaid me. I won't give you a second chance. You can't kill me. I am the Imari. They will never stand for it."
Conrad fell to his knees. He could feel the bell beating in his heart, ripping him to shreds from the inside out.
"You aren't the Imari, Conrad. You're a science experiment. You're a sacrifice."
Mallory shuffled some papers, then said something to someone off screen. He listened for a moment.
"Good news, Conrad. We're getting data from the suit. It should give us everything we need. We have a fetus with sustained Atlantis gene activation. It's actually the child of Patrick's daughter and Dieter. Talk about irony. Anyway, the trouble is, we need a genome of the same genetic stock before Atlantis gene activation. A parent, ideally. We also needed to track and test that genome as the Bell attacked it in order to understand exactly which genes and epigenetic factors are involved. As you'll remember, it's a lot of effort to disassemble a Bell. And then there's the whole power issue. Mallory waved his hand in the air nonchalantly. So we figured we'd just keep this Bell active, prep a syringe with the gene-tracking therapy, and wait for you to walk out. I was never very good at speeches, not as good as you. But I was good at figuring out what people would do. And you're very predictable, Conrad.
Conrad spit blood as he fell face forward into the ice.
I guess this is goodbye, old friend. As I said, your sacrifice will be remembered. As Mallory finished, a man ran into the office.
Mallory listened, and then looked confused.
Gibraltar? When?
Chapter 147. Kate held her breath as the portal door slid open. It was just as her father had said, a control room with tons of glass consoles. But there was someone there, a guard, leaning on a stool and reading a magazine. At the sight of Kate and the two boys, he gawked for a brief moment, then returned the stool to its four legs and scrambled to his feet. A magazine with a nude woman on the cover drifted to the floor as the guard grabbed an automatic rifle that had been leaning against the wall and pointed it at Kate.
"Don't move, Dr. Warner." His face was hard. He pulled his shoulder close to his mouth and said, "This is Mills, Chamber 7. I've got them, Warner and both boys. Request assistance." Within 10 seconds, there were two more guards in the room. They searched all three of them with a brief pat-down. The soldier in charge smiled as he pocketed the pistol from Kate. "Come with us," he said.
Chapter 148. Mallory Craig paced in his office, waiting for news. He looked up when the Amari agent entered.
"We got the biometric data from Kane's suit. Dr. Chang is analyzing it, but he says he needs the body."
"Fine, get him the body. Where are we on Gibraltar?"
"They have Warner and the two children."
"Which Warner?"
Mallory snapped.
"The woman."
What was Mallory missing?
"You want us to... Has anyone else come out?"
"No."
Craig sat down at the desk and began scribbling feverishly. When he had finished, he stood, stuffed the letter into an envelope, and scribbled an address on the outside.
"I need you to deliver this."
"What about Dr. Warner?"
Mallory looked out the window and thought, had Vale and her father died in the tombs?
"Hold the woman there. We need to interrogate her. And triple the guard on that room. Tell them I'm on my way."
Chapter 149. Kate held the boys close to her side as they followed the men down a series of corridors. Behind them, a familiar voice called out,
"Stop!"
Cade and the guards turned to the man, who was accompanied by two guards as well. They wore uniforms with a flag Kate had never seen. Below it were two block letters in a square.
"I'll take her from here," Martin Gray said. "No can do, sir. Chairman Craig's orders."
Her lead captor stepped forward, squaring with Martin and his men. Kate almost gasped as she took in Martin's appearance. His hair was wild and unkempt. He hadn't shaved in months. He probably hadn't showered in just as long. His long hair and beard, combined with the ragged, worn look in his eyes, was a sharp contrast to the clarity and softness of his voice. "I understand. You have your orders, Captain. I wonder, before you take them, if I could see the children? It's a research request, something we urgently need." Before the man could answer, Martin stepped forward and knelt at the children. He gathered them with his arms and held them close to him, covering their eyes and ears as muzzle flashes and the sound of gunshots filled the cramped corridor. Chapter 150. The three soldiers who had been guarding Kate collapsed to the floor, and Martin lifted the children into his arms and marched quickly out of the corridor. Kate chased after him.
Martin, we have to get out of here quickly.
Martin's guards brought up the rear as they raced through the iron hallways.
That's quite an understatement, Kate.
Then Martin stopped.
Wait,